91.3 KXCI Tucson. Real people, real radio. Hello, Tucson. Thanks for joining us today at 91.3 KXCI. This is Kathy Harris with my co-host, Aspen Green, and we're bringing you Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. You can hear more of our programs at kxci.org on the Broad Perspectives Radio page. And we have such an interesting show this week. We have three guests. We're going to be talking about the controversy over the United States Air Force's proposals for changes in training flights over several areas in Southwest Arizona, and these changes may well affect you. So Aspen, tell our audience, who are we talking to today?
Karen Fassenpohr lives in a remote part of the Chiricahua Mountains and is a full-time community volunteer, working in areas including conservation, immigration, and family advocacy. Dorothea Stevens is an elder from Calva on the San Carlos Apache Reservation. She is an enrolled San Carlos Apache tribal member and has been a public health nurse in various places, including San Carlos, for over 49 years. And Alicia De Mesa is from the Phoenix area and is of Apache descent from Chihuahua, Mexico. She is a PhD candidate in human and social dimensions of science and technology and an indigenous education specialist for Labriola National American Indian Data Center at Arizona State University. Welcome to our show, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
So I've spent some time recently in the Rodeo and Portal area on the east side of the Chiricahuas, and I went there visiting friends and bird watching and going to Heritage Day. And during my visit there, I became aware of the Peaceful Chiricahua Skies organization and the Air Force proposal. So I went to the Animas, New Mexico public hearing, and I did have the opportunity to listen to what people felt like the impact was for the proposed changes to the Air Force combat flight trainings within Arizona and New Mexico. And part of the interview that we'll be doing today is with Karen Fassenpohr from the Peaceful Chiricahua Skies from the Portal area, which is the Tombstone MOA area. So you represent Peaceful Chiricahua Skies. Could you tell us about this organization and what your role is? Because I know it's all volunteers.
Peaceful Chiricahua Skies is a local grassroots group of individuals, businesses, and organizations in the Chiricahua and Peloncillo Mountain areas in the Tombstone MOA. I help coordinate the work there to get people information about why we're opposing expanded military training flights in this area.
Just so our audience understands, can you briefly explain what an MOA is?
Sure. An MOA is a military operations area, and there are 9 MOAs across southern Arizona and New Mexico that are affected by this proposal.
And I heard there was no tribal representation in consideration of these proposals and no public hearings on the reservations. So I wanted to take this opportunity to find out what the impact is on the reservation land. And that's why we have with us today Alicia and Dorothea to speak to us about the proposed changes and its effect on the Jackal MOA area. We'll start with first having you both introduce yourselves.
Hello, my name is Dorothea Stevens. Maiden name is Nasby from Vilas. I'm glad to be here. I'm very concerned, and I was glad to be invited.
And I'll introduce myself for any Apache listeners. Dakota, she Alicia de Mesa Guance, Nakaya Inde, Talamana Enchli, Inda Bunchti. Hello, I'm Alicia de Mesa, and just as was mentioned, I'm from the Phoenix area. My maternal lineage is Apache from Chihuahua, Mexico, and we're also Mestiza and Japanese.
So what are some of the new changes in the DEIS, and what are the potential impacts resulting from this expansion? Karen, what would the Tombstone MOA see? Because that's your area.
I'm going to tell you specifically what the DEIS says for the Tombstone MOA, but it's similar in other MOAs. One of the biggest changes is that they're planning to double the number of combat training flights here. So they're now proposing 8,000 flights a year in just the Tombstone MOA. And that was a big surprise to us. They're also expanding the MOA area for Tombstone so that it would now cover the town of Portal and some area north of there. They are proposing training flights down to 100 feet above ground level, which again is really jarring to think about. How could that even happen? Sonic booms and subsonic flights down to 5,000 feet above ground level. They currently are doing that at 30,000 feet. Flares and chaff are another big one. And this, again, this is different numbers, but happening in all of the MOAs. Here in Tombstone, they're proposing dropping 30,000 flares a year down to 2,000 feet above ground level, and 7,000 bundles of chaff dropped annually from as low as 2,000 feet above ground level.
So when I was in Animas and I was in a store there, we just happened to be asking where this meeting was, and we were talking with one of the ladies there, and she mentioned that what we didn't know was that when some of the flares were dropped, the fires were started more often than people realize. Is that something that you also experience, fires happening from the flares?
Yes, it's very concerning. So we have not had flares drop much here in the past. So this is going to be a big change for us. But there are a number of fires that have been started by flares, including the huge Telegraph fire that affected much of Arizona.
And then a new word for me this week, that weekend, was chaff. Can you explain to us what chaff is and what the dangers of chaff are in these activities?
Chaff are bundles of fiberglass, aluminum-coated silica fibers. According to the Air Force, each bundle of chaff has approximately 5.6 million of these silica fibers. The Air Force hasn't disclosed a lot about the dangers of these, but we know that chaff is not biodegradable. It can drift. It can affect water and soil. It can be inhaled by animals and people. It's something we're very concerned about.
Alicia, could you tell us a little bit about where the San Carlos Apache Reservation is located and who the San Carlos Apaches are for people who may not be familiar?
Yeah, so San Carlos Apache Indian Reservation, it's located in southeastern Arizona, and it spans three counties. So you've got Gila, Graham, and Pinal counties all within the boundaries of San Carlos. It consists of over 1.8 million acres, and which makes it the 10th largest Indian reservation in the entire United States by land area. And within that, you have different ecosystems such as desert, alpine meadows, and ponderosa pine forest ecosystems. So one thing about Apaches that most people don't understand is that we were never one big tribe or even a couple of tribes. Historically, Apaches were organized essentially as nomadic and semi-nomadic matrilineal bands. And so that means that we're related by kinship and clans through the mother's lineage, and that's what makes it matrilineal. We lived very intimately with the land. Men were hunters, women plant gatherers for food, for medicine, for supplies. And the traditional Apache lands across the many, many bands really extended throughout the Southwest. So that's Arizona from Flagstaff and Prescott all the way down south, including the Chiricahua Mountains, all the way into Sonora, Mexico. Most of the land really in New Mexico, parts of Texas, and into Chihuahua and Coahuila, the states that are within Mexico, where my own family's from. And so, you know, because Apaches lived in many places and were guided by seasons and food needs, first the Spanish, then the Mexicans, and then the U.S. military often fought Apaches and considered Apaches the enemy and in the way of land and natural resources. And that's kind of what led to Apache Wars in 1800s. So by the time late 1800s came around, many Apache bands were rounded up by the U.S. Army and put into a prisoner of war camp. And the Apache people called it Hell's 40 Acres because the conditions were so horrific. And that is the original San Carlos. And so these bands were forced to live together in really deplorable conditions and stripped of language, ceremonies, traditional, cultural, and food practices, specifically by the U.S. military. It was eventually made a federally recognized tribal reservation by executive order of President Grant. That's Ulysses S. Grant. And so today it's governed by a tribal council, chairman and vice chairman. So like a lot of other federally recognized tribes, San Carlos has tribal sovereignty as a government-to-government relationship with the federal government. So in a way, that's somewhat similar to state relationships with the federal government. There are currently 5 federally recognized Apache tribes in Arizona. There are 2 in Oklahoma, and there are 2 in New Mexico, as well as federally unrecognized groups that are throughout both states, including Texas and also Mexico.
Thanks so much for sharing all that. This is the kind of stuff you do not learn in the history books in public schools.
Exactly.
So I'm really appreciative of you taking the time to explain all that. So how do the proposed changes affect San Carlos Apaches in Arizona?
Well, within the draft environmental impact statement, they have mapped areas, and they don't come out in that DEIS that says this is San Carlos Apache land directly. They have MOAs. There is one called Jackal MOA, Jackalo MOA, and Outlaw MOA. And these are all over San Carlos land. I will note the choice of words that are chosen by the Air Force to actually even describe these areas. But it is all San Carlos land. There are some that intersect also with Fort Apache, which is the White Mountain Apache Reservation as well. The backstory is that decades ago, and we're not quite sure when, the San Carlos tribal government did make an agreement with the Air Force that they could fly over San Carlos from thousands of feet in the air. Now, the changes that are put forward by this draft environmental impact statement are to both increase the frequency of combat air training flights and lower the altitude that the combat jets fly to, as low as 100 feet or 500 feet from the ground. So per that document, 5%, this is what they're stating, or 1 in 20 flights will be 100 feet, or another alternative is 500 feet above the ground with supersonic booms and chaffs and flares. And per the document, supersonic booms will increase in frequency by 14%, which might sound low, but actually is not low at all. So, you know, currently people in San Carlos are already at the effect of supersonic booms, thousands of feet in the air. Those supersonic booms are felt indoors as recently as just a week ago. And, you know, keep in mind also that many people are not just indoors, they are outside for any number of reasons. It could be for our coming of age ceremonies, for foraging, for daily life. We do have unhoused people. Everyone is at the effect of the physical, the mental, the emotional effects of these phenomena. And just imagine, you know, babies, mothers, elders, people with disabilities who suddenly hears a sonic boom, feeling that from thousands of feet in the air. And now the Air Force is proposing that at 500 feet and below. Today, San Carlos has a population of over 17,000 enrolled tribal members. I'm going to note that many, despite the history, many have served very proudly in the U.S. military.
All right. So, Dorothea, what are the biggest concerns about the proposed changes?
Well, first of all, I'm saying this because my mother died from cancer, and that was from the downwind from the radioactive fallout from the nuclear testing. And we had a lot of Apaches that have died from that. That was the first thing that popped in my head when I heard about this. This is going to start all over again, and it sounds more serious this time. I contacted Alicia back right away because I didn't like what I heard, and I wanted to make sure somebody knew, if anybody knew, or what was going on. Alicia filled me in on this a little bit more, so I'm learning as I'm going along. The thought about them coming at least down to 500 feet is even terrifying for our animals, our plants, even the people, and any nuclear stuff that they can be falling. It just amazes me that they haven't wanted to go or talk to the tribe about it. So I was very concerned. I'm just scared for everybody. And the problem is, I don't think hardly anybody knew about it. I didn't know about it until now. I text the chairman of the White Mountains. We text some stuff to the tribal lawyer. And then I sent each of them a page of what was given to each tribal council member. And then I put it on my Facebook page.
Good for you.
So I just want everybody to know what's going on. I'm just worried about this whole thing. And I work with animals too, so that's another thing. Plus, we have a lot of traditional prayers that we do, and we have stuff that are sacred that are on the land. And I just wanted to make one point. Like Alicia said, we have so many people that have been in the military that to them, the military is pretty awesome to all of us. We admire them and all of that stuff because we sent our boys there. Even I joined in the 1970s. And so to us, they are our own warriors. They're sacred to us also. And we sent our medicine men, even went down to pray for the Apache helicopters when they were first manufactured and bless them. I just hate to see them turn around and do this to us and thinking that we don't know what's going on, which is kind of true in a way. But I just hope they don't destroy that thing that we have with them because the Air Force is planning to do this. And I know it's not everybody, but I'm still wanting to know who started this thing.
Right.
I'm still kind of disappointed and scared.
And I think that's the biggest thing we've learned through a very quick amount of time and finding out about this situation. This was presented to me directly, and then finding out that just hardly anyone knows about this at San Carlos. And yet here, the entire reservation, the people, the land, the water, the air, the animals, the plants, everything, including endangered animals, are all at the effect. And where this document wasn't even created with any tribal representation. If you actually read through over 800 pages, which I did do, of the draft impact statement and the 600 plus page appendix, there is nowhere in there any consultation or knowledge that went into the creation of this environmental impact. And it shows because there's a lot of data in there that is based off of non-tribal areas. And there's many statements in there about dwellings, for example, and that there should be no real effects of supersonic booms, in particular, also some other with the pollutants on dwellings. But if you actually read between the lines, the basis that they're taking it from are new constructions in high quality condition, things that you might find in Phoenix, for example, but are not necessarily the case and often not the case over on the reservation itself. So even the comparisons that they're, or the basis by which they're doing their analysis is not relevant to, I would say, neither San Carlos nor really any tribal reservation, especially within Arizona. And that's quite alarming that they would do that. The other thing that I'd like to say is that the Air Force itself, the low level flying within highly populated areas, the reason why they're not in Phoenix area doing this is because there's a federal aviation regulation 91.79 that states that no plane may fly closer than 500 feet from any person, vessel, vehicle, or structure. That is already on the books, and yet they seem to have no problem flying over almost 17,000 people and bring that to San Carlos Apache lands. And it just frankly demonstrates a blatant disregard for the well-being of Native peoples and for life that's on the ground, below the ground, above the ground. When Dorothea was talking about the nuclear fallout and the downwinders, there are so many environmental pollutants coming from various sources. We do know that the rates of cancer are higher on the reservation. And to go in and pinpoint to say this is exactly the source is complicated and difficult. But yet, this is another source or potential source of what can happen in terms of illness. And those long-term effects and even short-term effects are not known. But we know that historically, when these things happen, it's typically not good. One of them is nitrogen dioxide, stated within the report. And they're going to increase it by 86 to 156 tons released in the air annually just over San Carlos. And it's highly alarming.
Yeah, I bet. Karen, can we talk a little bit more about the effects of the sonic booms? I read an article in the Arizona Daily Star from an advocate at the Center for Biological Diversity, published on September 21st. He lived near Edwards Air Force Base in California. He talked about the noise causing anxiety, ear pain, headaches, and fear, a lot of fear amongst his classmates. Can you talk about what you've heard and what you've experienced from you and your neighbors?
Yes, this is a big concern. And we've had sonic booms here, but not at nearly as low of an elevation as they're proposing. What we've seen here is just the terrifying noise, shaking of windows. People have a lot of concerns about structural damage to buildings. We had a number of people talk in public hearings about having older adobe homes and what that's going to do. There are also concerns about what the Air Force calls the startle effect, but people falling, there being accidents. There are obviously effects on both domestic animals and livestock, as well as wildlife. Another concern is just the effect on the land. Sonic booms can cause rock and landslides, weakening of cliffs. One of the protected areas in the Tombstone MOA is the Chiricahua National Monument. And that sensitive landscape with hoodoos and the other formations there could really be severely affected by sonic booms.
Dorothea, so what do you want people who are listening to this broadcast to do next?
First of all, I'm sure that I will want them to look up more information if they need to know more. A lot of them probably don't understand what's going on, and they can contact their councilman, because the chairman told me that they were going to go ahead and meet. So they're going to have a meeting, and then I want the people, I'm going to speak in Apache. Sao is that join a cup? Nare car count a gas, Mr. Nare, the histo hunter, 500 feet a year. Chabest and I did less a deal, and I was the queen of source be it. Anna echo no council member, Jayaras Tio, Rasja, Kurska, that a teen to the Rasja, next month he is. So, but not a silly case, so tied up, but I'll sheet a less. I told them that I wanted them to go talk to the council, read more about what's going on, let them know how they feel, and then we need to put up a stand.
For anybody else who is a listener out there who's not enrolled at San Carlos, be concerned, do the due diligence. Peaceful Chiricahua Skies, looking through, we're not affiliated with them, but you know, we've looked through their website. They have a lot of good information on there. They have a direct way to get to the public commenting links that are incredibly important, because at this point, we only have until October 9th, 2024, for people to go and make their public comments. This could be anybody in any state to state very specifically their concerns. And that, as we know it, outside of Tribal Council at San Carlos, is the only input that the United States Air Force is going to take in. And so our voices matter, and it's going to take all of us to change this.
Yeah, I think the very important thing is that we still have until October 9th for people to put in public input.
The other real concern is about the lack of transparency and accountability. This proposal from the Air Force has really violated the letter and the spirit of the NEPA, or the National Environmental Policy Act. Just a couple examples of that. In the scoping period, 6,667 people put in comments, and the Air Force chose not to disclose any of those comments or who made comments, including from government agencies or local governments. Instead, they did a summary chart of the comment, which is in Appendix D, and they have just a very short summary, and then they have their response. And it was the most dismissive thing I've ever read. They didn't address the comments, including substantive ones. Their response was frequently either referring to a page number that didn't really address the issue, or just saying, this is not an issue. There's no impact. Most NEPA processes that I've been involved in, they have a reading room with all the comments that people can go look at. So we don't even know what the comments were, much less if, you know, they were summarized or addressed correctly. When the DEIS came out, public hearings were announced, and there were no public hearings in Cochise County, on tribal lands, or in Tucson or Phoenix. And those are some of the most impacted areas of this. And we had asked for that even in scoping. And then we asked again when the DEIS came out, and we were told, well, virtual hearings are good enough. And I think that answer, if you know anything about broadband in rural and underserved areas, that's just not an equitable solution. So we had a lot of concerns about how public comments were taken. There's also been some concerns about the Air Force refusing to disclose various information that we've asked for. So one issue is with the violating flights that I talked about. First of all, every time somebody files a nuisance flight report with either Davis-Monthan or Air National Guard, we typically ask for a response and typically don't get one. Then we asked for broad information about Air Force flights in this area so we could compare that. They said get a FOIA. The Center for Biological Diversity has done a FOIA on that. They refused to answer it. That's now in litigation. There are also a number of federal and state agencies that were required to offer input on the environmental impact study before it went out as a draft. And there's very little evidence in the document itself of what those agencies said. And I actually myself have been contacting some of those agencies and have very quickly gotten a response, you're going to have to get a FOIA to get that information. So I went ahead and did a FOIA. I'd never done one before this.
What is that? What is that?
Freedom of Information Act. Oh. So it's a request to the government for information that should be public information. And there's a very defined process for it. They basically have been not responding to those FOIAs and putting up a lot of obstacles. And we're still in the process of trying to work to get that information. But I have a lot of concern. This is not what I thought our government was or should be. And this whole process, really, there's a lot of questions about lack of transparency.
You have a wonderful website with a wealth of information and a place where people can actually make public comments. I think you have a link to that. Can you tell us what your website is?
Yes, it's peacefulchiricahuaskies.com. And Chiricahua is C-H-I-R-I-C-A-H-U-A. There's a lot of resources on that site, but right on the front page of the site is also a link to the Air Force site, which is very important. And that's where people can go to make public comments. So the Air Force site is Arizona Regional Airspace EIS.com. And again, that's linked right on our front page. But the most important thing people can do if they care about this area and many other areas of Southern Arizona is to go to the Air Force website and put in comments before October 9th, telling the Air Force it's not acceptable to expand military combat training over our rural communities and tribal lands.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be on our show today. We really appreciate it. It's definitely something we want all of the public to find out about and to be able to put their input in on.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And remind everybody to pray for us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We will do that. And, you know, this is obviously a topic that we could spend all day talking about, but unfortunately, we are out of time. Karen Fassenpour, Alicia DeMesa, and Dorothea Stevens, thank you so much for talking to us today about the proposed changes to the Air Force's training flights over Southwest Arizona. This is a topic we will be watching closely. And thanks for all your advocacy about this issue, too. And thanks to all of you out there. You've been listening to Broad Perspectives Radio on 91.3 KXCI. And you can hear more of our programs at kxci.org on the Broad Perspectives Radio page. But for now, stay tuned, because next up we have Boom Goddess Radio with Jennifer Davis Page. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and we'll see you next week.
We ran out of time and did not have time to play the song called Answers by Sage Bond. Sage Bond is an Apache singer, songwriter, and guitarist from the Navajo Nation. We will put that song on our Broad Perspectives page when we upload the show.